connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for web.
Computer today.
Computer.
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 NetSurfer Pro.
You know, between you and me,
there's a microphone.
And between you and me, there's at least 6 feet of distance.
At least. We're not actually giving it a limit, though. There's no maximum value.
Yes.
We could be on other sides of the world right now.
I mean, that is how we did this podcast for quite some time.
Right. We found one of those, what is it, antipoles? Places that you can actually stand on that are on opposite sides of the Earth, since it's very hard to actually accomplish that.
Yeah, and so we, you know, it was, I was somewhere in the ocean, you were in St. Louis.
I was, in turning off Discord notification mode. Very, very fun and exciting. Very changing that output. Okay, so yeah.
So yeah, welcome back to NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. I'm your co-host, and no longer coronavirus, Galen.
And I'm Matt, and I haven't been sick at all, because I barely go anywhere, I don't really work anywhere, I just stay at home and stream and do this.
You know what, Matt? I disagree. I think that sounds pretty sick.
Nice, nice, nice. Good, good, yeah. But no, yeah, so it is the new year, it is season 2 of NetSurfer Pro, technically year 3, but the first year was kind of like the start of the next year. It's kind of like one big year.
It's like the first 6 episodes of The Office. Like, it's technically the first season, but like, you know, the real first season started after a while.
Right. It's kind of like the Tracy Ullman period of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Like, technically The Simpsons started before Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire. Bold move of them to start with a Christmas special, by the way. You ever think about that?
I don't think about The Simpsons at all, actually.
Okay, well, that's unfortunate, because I think about it constantly. especially when the subject comes up of favorite animated things, which is a very broad topic that is going to be touched on today, with one of my favorite animated things, favorite animators.
Although I will say, speaking of animated things, you might be a little bit, if you're watching this or reading,
if you're watching this, or reading this,
you might be a little bit worried that we've used the term animated, on the day of, January, 23rd, 2022, because there was a very recent animated event, that happened.
Oh no.
That's now kind of a bit of a meme.
Oh no. I don't know if I know what you're talking about.
I'm going to say exactly one word.
Mm-hmm.
Italian.
Oh no! No, we can't talk about that.
Yeah.
I know I put an explicit warning in front of every episode, but
We can't talk about it, because then this episode might be banned in Italy, unfortunately.
Yeah, we can't talk about it, because my mom listens to the show.
Yeah, safe to say, we are aware, we're not going to do a state of the meme over it.
Yes.
But it was very funny.
See, I thought you were going to talk about something else, and I'll say one word.
Go ahead.
Lambo. Can I just say, we do already have a good candidate for best longest this year.
Which was,
shoutouts to Dan Olson.
Yeah.
Just in general, but also, if you want context for what I just said, that probably won't help you, but it'll help you with other things, or make you infuriated.
I think this is the kind of group where, this is certainly the kind of show we try to cultivate the audience, where if it makes you infuriated, I don't think you're listening to this show.
I mean, infuriated in the sense that it makes you hate people.
Oh, okay.
Infuriated at people who do bad things.
Not infuriated at Dan Olson.
No, don't be infuriated at Dan Olson. He speed ran the sniper, was it? Anyways, so yeah, it's a new season of NetSurfer Pro, and we're doing something we planned for our anniversary episode, but that didn't happen. So we're just going to do it here. If you remember, our first episode was Little Runmo, and we briefly mentioned the work of an animator that inspired Little Runmo, an animator by the name of Felix Colgrave. And today we're going to talk about one specific animation of Felix Colgrave's, as well as sort of his general oeuvre or whatever. And so, yeah, strap in, because this is going to be a interesting subject.
Yes, this is going to be one of those where we're going to say, like, you should watch it beforehand. It's only, like, you know, 10 minutes, but we'll go over it in general for if you haven't watched it and don't want to. But yes, today's episode is over Double King.
Yes, I was like, King? No, Double King. Hell yeah. Want a quadruple King. Yeah, so Double King is an animation by Felix Colgrave released on April 2nd, 2017. He could not release it a day beforehand or people would think it was fake. Because, you know, Double King's really real. It is about a king who steals crowns. That's the short of it. It's an animated video, of course. There's no voice acting. All of the acting is done through animation. There is music, of course, that accompanies everything. Sort of a very traditional cartoon style.
Yeah. The sound design as well is also very top-notch.
Yes.
The plot, it has a plot, it has events.
Yeah.
But the sort of plot structure is effectively, it starts off a like, round-looking man who has kind of, like, Rayman feet and hands and how they float around and eyes and a crown. Walks upstairs to a Rat King, and the Rat King, like, is, you know, feebly stands up to greet him, and then he grabs his head, pulls out his skull in a very, like, animated cartoony way. It's not, like, it's, his head, like, flops. It's not, like, gory. It's just, again, very, like, cartoony and...
It's like removing a pillow from a pillowcase.
Yeah. And then grabs the crown off of his head and slots it in perfectly to his current crown and splash screen Double King.
Yes. He's visited by sort of, what would it be? Like ambassadors of the Rat Kingdom dressed in cloaks.
Yeah. I had kind of read it as like, that was now, not his court, but that was like his lowers.
Yeah.
That was the people he was, residing over.
Yeah. Sort of like the dukes or what have you.
Yeah.
I do love the bit with like, he sees them, he climbs down his giant tower and just puts out some like, puts out like a mouse trap with some cheese on it and just waits behind the door.
Yeah.
And the little mouse almost goes for it.
But I believe the next one is we see sort of more about how the world works in that like there's a crown on a what's the next one?
Is the next one the goat?
Yes, I think yeah. So. Yeah, there's a goat on a mountain who has a crown, and as he tries to, like, eat a leaf, the crown falls and then lands onto a cloud, which becomes the next king, and or the cloud king, I guess, and it rains onto a pumpkin that becomes the pumpkin king.
Mm-hmm, the pump king.
It, like, grows this, like, you know, royal lapel and its own weird crown. Which then the Double King immediately runs up and smashes the pumpkin to steal the crown.
Yep.
And he puts that crown on top, but as he is eating...
Bullet with butterfly wings?
Smashing
pumpkins?
Shut up. I'd say you're not funny, but you are.
Thanks. Yeah, so... Yeah, continue.
Yeah, and so as he's eating the next day, that crown rots and flies swarm it. But then a fly king comes up and, you know, starts trying to fly off. But the king grabs it and, like, slices it open like it's a ham and steals that crown, which he then puts on his finger as a ring.
I'm so fly king tired right now.
I just flied in from Kingsville, and boy, are my arms tired.
Damn. Is Kingsville near Queens? Yeah, what's so, the next event? So yeah. After he does the fly, there's, like, this giant mountain that coils out, and it turns out it's a serpent. The serpent has this, like, really gnarly, like, distortion guitar that appears when he appears. And the Double King, like, runs up its neck and then grabs two, like, huge swords... like cloud-sized swords.
Yeah.
Stabs him into the Serpent King, steals his crown. There's a bit with a fish where he kills the Fish King and tries to steal its crown, but its crown was actually the shell of a hermit crab. And, like, some steel drums play playfully as it jumps out into the sea.
And then the next scene is somewhat dissociated, but, like, it's the, like, caterpillar queen, or caterpillar king, I guess.
The caterpillar monarch, if you will.
Yeah. But, like, the current monarch sort of hands over the crown to a younger one and is sent down the river, sort of like a Viking funeral style, except that when she, you know, gets down to the river, get down to the river, they sprout beautiful butterfly wings, and they fly above the tree line, and they're this, like, kind of goat-like creature, or, like...
I just love it because it just goes, like, eh-heh.
Yeah.
And it looks exactly like that.
Yeah, it's wonderful because, like, you know, you get just a silhouette as it's flying up, but then once it reaches the tree line, it has a tapir nose and, like, a giraffe neck and, like a sort of impala body. It's really beautifully creative, but also just really funny how, like,
yeah.
the sudden sort of, like, cut to this weird creature. And then missiles start flying at it. As the Double King, riding a Dr. Eggman-esque sort of ride.
It even says, like, Ovum Regia, which is, like, Egg King or Egg Ruler.
Yeah, Royal Egg or
Royal
something
egg.
In Latin.
Yeah. It should be noted, he also is eating an egg during breakfast when the Fly King appears, so
yeah.
That's fun.
He manages to missile the butterfly creature, but it turns out it's actually a tracker that he follows to this, like, new land.
Yeah, there's, like, a mountain where the top of the mountain is sort of a crown made of dirt. The Double King enters this, like, moving fortress and shoots himself out of a cannon into the top of the crown. The mountain crown,
which has my favorite musical sting, where, like, as he's scrambling up, it's this, like, really, really, like, rambunctious jazz drum solo, you know?
Yeah, I love afterwards. He, like, shoots the moving fortress to make it back off, and it sprouts these two hands that are, like, up, and they're like, okay, I'm backing up. he jumps into the place where the crown was and finds it's like a forest filled with crowns. There's like a mushroom king and he tries to take the crown, but he doesn't know how to like wear it. He gets distracted by a bird with like a crown of feathers on its head, and he tries to chase the bird, but he's unable to get its crown.
And it culminates where he, like, pops his head up in this field of flowers, sits back down, notices the ring that is on his finger, and, like, grabs his hand, produces another one with a knife.
Yeah.
And, like, cuts it off of the finger to grab the crown, quote-unquote, which causes him to bleed.
And bleed out.
Set to the, like, the flowers from before, then, like, do a beautiful, like, psychedelic warping into, you know, a creature-looking mm-hmm. thing, and then, like, a mouth and whatnot. And it ends with, like, the river of blood leading to just his body lying there.
Yeah. So he is sort of taken by these, like, death shamans.
Yeah.
And whisked away beneath the world, which is, like, this big beast. Into the beast's mouth, which is the underworld. He goes through this, like, little golden gate that just has the word dead written on it. There's a bunch of underworld creatures, like there's a harpy and stuff like that. And he realizes that his crown is gone, and he gets really angry about it. But he is ushered into sort of a king banquet, like a meeting of the kings in the afterlife, where he enters and finds all the kings that he killed are trying to eat food, though most of them cannot do so given what the Double King has done. And there is a Skeleton King who welcomes the Double King to the table.
The Skeleton King has a, like, massive, wonderfully ornate crown, and so the Double King immediately bolts onto the table, crashes through all of the food, steps through the poor Fish King's, like, cake that he's trying to eat, and
stabs the Serpent King on his own fork.
Yeah, and just, like, tries desperately to get it, but the Skeleton King just, like, levitates him up and then throws him into his seat. But every time he gets into the seat, he just immediately gets back onto the table and runs. He eventually, like, punches the Skeleton King, which upsets him enough to, like, just sort of smash him into his chair as a, like, no, stay.
Yeah, the Double King tries to fold his tablecloth into a crown, and he about does it, and he looks really proud of it. But the Skeleton King steals that crown from him and puts it on top of his own crown.
Yeah.
And he's all like, ta-da. And then the Double King throws a tantrum.
Yeah, which causes the Rat King to, like, look at the Skeleton King and just be like, entirely through his eyes, which are, like, just little round eyes, like, sitting on the table. Just, like, looks at the king and then looks at the crown, just like, come on, just shut him up. And, the Skeleton King acquiesces and throws the crown over the king, which, like, it literally covers him entirely. And he, like, gives, like, hands of, like, yeah! And there's a musical sting that's like, da-da, more or less.
Yeah. He runs out of the banquet hall, out of the Golden Gates, and falls into space.
And then that's the credits.
Yep. So, yeah, it's about this guy. We don't even know who he's the king of, or what he's the king of. It's so interesting, because every other king has, like, a thing to them, you know?
Yeah.
And we didn't mention that there are other sort of ambassadors, or dukes, or what have you. Like, the Serpent King has serpent dukes that show up, and the Fly King has fly dukes that show up. And all of them are just kind of waiting in line to hear back from the Double King. But there's, like, never anybody else shown inside the Double King's palace.
Yeah, there is one moment where he's, like, falling off of a cliff, and it shows, like, shadowy figures that, like, it had shown sort of him in shadows where it was just his eyes. And it shows three pairs of eyes that I think is supposed to be his entourage.
Right. And they're, like, waiting for the day he dies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to bring those up, because every time I watched it, I couldn't quite figure out what those were. It's really interesting. So, like, I really want to mention how Felix Colgrave is sort of, a lot of his... So generally, he's very surrealist.
Yeah.
His animations are very surreal. Even, like, one of his newer ones, Throat Notes, that is more grounded in setting, still opts to depict its sort of subjects in a more bizarre way, sort of psychedelic way.
Yeah, it's very stream of consciousness.
Yeah. But also, a big deal in Felix Colgrave's animation is, like, the shot composition. Like, a lot of individual scenes are, like, it's hard to explain. Like, a lot of animation has sort of the focal shots in a scene, and then it has, like, sort of transitional shots. I'm talking out of my ass here, I should say. I don't work in animation production. But I feel like there's a tendency to, like, focus on certain shots as being, like, the ideal shot that presents something, you know, like, this angle and the lighting and the composition is significant to the writing. But then sometimes you have shots that exist more for the sake of conveying the story. Like, if two characters are walking down the street, that doesn't usually have greater significance that is poured into it via other techniques.
Yeah, usually the significance would come from them then saying something like, nice of the princess to invite it to a castle, eh, Luigi?
Right, but, like, not only are almost every scene given some sort of weight in that sort of regard as, like, an artistic shot or an artistic composition, like a painting, but a lot of times there are shots that seem to start as that sort of, like, landscape or Like, you could take a lot of frames from this, and it would be a beautiful picture, which isn't to say that, like, that's what good animation is or anything, because animation is to be played out. But I think what I'm trying to get at is more so that, like, his sense of, like, every shot is its own sort of painting and work is really interesting.
Yeah. We very recently watched Throat Notes, so it also kind of like, it's also very prevalent there, possibly more prevalent, but, it's this feeling that like every new shot is its own small story.
Yeah.
Like in this case, it's quite literal that like every new king is kind of its own story, but even the ones that are more transitional are like, you know, even like the goat, or like the goat scene that throws the crown into the cloud, sort of like it exists to give us context. It exists to sort of explain the world a little more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the only scene that would be like that could really be considered like fully transitional is the scenes of the like the sun and the moon. But even that is sort of like, even that kind of is basically setting up the later scene where we see that the sun and the moon are orbiting, you know, a creature that goes literally into their mouths.
But like, well, that's transitional plot wise, and it doesn't establish much other than a time skip. It is still like arranged in a very sort of intentional way.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, symmetry involved. It's very geometric in that regard.
It does that animation thing that I love, where, like, it fits everything perfectly into itself. Like, every time the sun stops in that scene, it's always perfectly aligned with the arch. And that's always one of my favorite, like, usually that's kind of used for comedy, mm-hmm. where, like, it even does it in Double King. Where, like, a character walks through an archway and it perfectly fits their frame.
Yeah.
But, like, in that case, it's very, like, it's very beautiful.
I think it also adds to the surreality of, like, this is a universe that plays by different rules.
Yeah.
And so the sun and moon fitting in the archway, while it could be viewed as, like, in-universe, the architect's choice, it also feels almost like, by cosmic fate or by cosmic decree, the sun and the moon shall stop at this position.
Yeah.
Same thing with like how the whole Pumpkin King sequence into the Fly King, it like the flies come from inside the pumpkin crown.
Yeah.
They don't come from outside and swarm around something rotten. They like spawn from it, which is kind of creeps me out a little, but also like, is it's another example of sort of the rules of the world being presented.
Yeah. Like, it's a wonderful sort of... There are things that start from, you know, outside, but it does give that beautiful quality of, like, every new thing sort of births its own entourage, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It has to be mentioned that this is a funny short.
Yes.
Like, we talk about, like, you know, shot composition and some creepy stuff, but there are a lot of really good jokes and a lot of very playful bits. A lot of things I'm just really surprised that, like, somebody thought of, if that makes sense. Like I said, I love the bit of the crab jumping into the ocean and there's, like, steel drums.
Yeah.
I always love that. The very ending is always great too, just jumping out into space.
I also do want to say, on the note of like kind of creepy things, and this actually is sort of caught hearkening back to our little Runmo episode, there's a beautiful thing about this, which is that like there are like, how would I describe it, there are internet animations and stuff that are like 90% good and normal. Not good and normal, but yeah. Like 90% not scary, and then there's like a weird 10% where it just suddenly gets really scary.
Mm-hmm.
But much like how Little Runmo used like kind of creepy things but in more of just a funny way, I feel like Double King does that as well, where like we described multiple like gory moments, but really the most gory moment is just when the Snake King is stabbed through the head, Which, like, it is shocking that it's just, like, suddenly there's blood. But it's not, like, it's not untowardly creepy. You know, when the Fly King gets his head cut open, it's like the comedy, the, like, animation ham, you know, with just,
yeah,
it's meat and then a little bone. Like, it's spooky themed, but it's not, like, actually scary, necessarily.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to think of a kind of example to compare it to. It's like, it's not scary for the sake of being scary or being, like, a horror thing. It uses kind of aesthetics of horror sometimes, like teeth and bones and decay. But all of that is more so just to be weird. And weird doesn't mean scary necessarily. Oftentimes the way, like, a subject is framed or the way the tone shifts with music or characters makes it funny rather than just a picture of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, the other parts of the short are working in unison to diffuse the situation,
yeah,
from being too creepy.
I think, not to use Gooseworks as a comparison point again, I would compare it to, Gooseworks has a video called Ghost of the Year, which is also very funny. And, like, it is 99% funny, and, like, there is... Even the stuff that is kind of spooky is used specifically for comedy. But there is, like, a point where there's a character who's invisible, and she's entirely invisible. But thanks to the Mark V Visibismo, we can show a picture of her. And it's this, like, weird, distorted image of, like, you know, she's got, like, one big eye, one small eye. It's very... I'm gonna say analog horror, and that's a term that I keep using.
Oops.
But, like, it's that style of, like, creepy. And, like, the joke is that it's a really creepy image that, like, the narration kind of, like, starts toning out. And, like, you know, a bit of an ambiance plays right before it cuts back to the game show. And, like, that is funny. But the point of that is to be, like, a random, weird, unsettling moment that, like, shocks you a little bit.
Right.
As opposed, like, contrasting that with Double King, where, like, the weird random violent moments exist more to inform sort of, like, the world and feel more like a natural part that, like, it is a little shocking when a whole lot of blood starts spraying out of the finger, but, like, there's nothing before that wouldn't inform you that that's how this would work.
Yeah, I will say nothing is realistic.
Yeah.
Which is a big deal. It's, you know, it's like Looney Tunes in some regards. Like, I mean, obviously, cartoons today can still be violent at times. But, like, you've got something like Invincible, which is, like, realistic in the way it portrays injuries. And this is very fictional. Very minimalist in the way it depicts injury.
Yeah.
In a way that you really, for us at least, it's easy to not associate that with actual harm.
There is like one movement trick that I really like that Felix Krollgrave seems to really enjoy doing, which is like rolling movements. Like if you know how you can like roll your fingers, like you sort of like, you know, stretch and then squeeze them out, but you do it like pinky, then ring finger, then middle finger, then index finger, then thumb. Like it's that style of rolling movements, but he applies it to a lot. Like, you know, in the flower scene, it starts sort of, like, bottom right corner and then rolls up to the top left.
Or, right.
Yeah, various things like that.
It's sort of a wave motion.
Yeah.
I notice it, there's a lot of flowing things as well. Like, the robes of the ambassadors, there's, like, a flag that flows in the wind. It all kind of gives a sense of motion to scenes where there isn't a lot of motion already, which I think is pretty prominent throughout his works, that like there's always something moving, and even if it's like not going somewhere, there's still sort of autonomous movement involved.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say he uses a lot of mouths.
Yeah.
That's something I keep thinking about, like when the very first scene of the Double King entering the Rat King sort of castle, it's through a mouth-shaped door. The arches that the stars go through have eyeballs to imply that they're mouths.
Yeah.
There's the underworld is through the mouth of a beast, and the Double King himself has this like ghastly grim mouth. It's like really grisly mouth.
Yeah, you don't see it until the very end, but like it sort of it implies that like everything under the robe is just mouth.
Yeah. It's really interesting. There's just like I don't know what about it really. Maybe it's that the teeth can come in so many different sizes.
Yeah.
That's part of it, I think. I guess it's less mouths and more so just like beasts in a sort of generic sense.
Yeah. A lot of his visuals are very like hyper beastly in a very fun way.
Mm-hmm.
Like not in a like creepy way, but in just sort of like every tooth in the opening mouth is like a different style of tooth.
Yeah. Or even like the music video he did for the song Source by Fever the Ghost has like a bunch of mouths in it as well. And it's just something I keep thinking about. Like, is it something he's personally interested in? Or is it like a flourish? Like a Hitchcock silhouette? Is it just something that's kind of fun to animate, maybe? I don't know.
So, if I may sort of summarize, you are wondering what that mouth do.
Yeah, I am wondering what the mouth do.
But what does the mouth mean?
What does a mouth mean?
Yeah, color, I think, is another sort of big, really, like, important part of his animation style, which, saying it like that kind of makes me sound like...
Yes.
That kind of sounds like I'm bullshitting a school book report over this animation.
Yeah.
Another aspect I like of this short is the color.
It is really colorful at times.
So like with Double King, it's very. I don't think it's pastel. It's muted but bright colors.
It's like faded almost.
Yeah,
a faded room.
Yeah, and it really helps the shadows stand out because, like, the darker spots of the, like, the darker sparts.
Hey, strong man, have you put more paint over those darker sparts?
Oh, man. The darker, like, more shadowed parts of the animation then sort of, like, stand out a lot more. It really helps, especially the Double King himself, to stand out. Because, you know, there's always kind of a small shadow as his robe rolls in through movement.
Yeah. It is interesting. It feels like the highest saturation is inside that forest of crowns.
Yeah.
In, like... The castle that he lives in is very, like, earthy tones, but almost sand-colored. A lot of, like, tans and sort of browns, but very muted browns. The ground is almost a wasteland, very rocky. And, you know, like, the Rat King's castle is sort of the same way. But then, yeah, like, when he gets to the forest, there's, like, that bright red mushroom that really stands out from everything else. And the bright yellow bird feathers.
Yeah. Shout out to the Mushroom's Guard, by the way, which is this, like, little meep creature is the best way I can describe it. It's adorable. I love it.
It's very good, yeah. Yeah, so there is sort of a feeling as well of, like, as the scale in complexity increases, so too does the color, until his moment of bright red when his blood flows.
Yeah.
Also, another that reminds me of another sort of common theme is recursion, in a weird way. Not infinite recursion, but finite recursion.
Yeah.
Like, so in this, obviously, there's, like, the Fly King coming out of the Pumpkin King's crown, which comes from the reign of the Cloud King. There's the whole forest of crowns being inside the crown of a mountain. You know, there's the idea of, like, stacking crowns on top of other crowns. There's sort of this element of, like, repetition, I guess, is a better way to put it. But then, like, in Throat Notes, there's also, like, when, like, you look inside the frog's throat and it, like, twists around itself to make a tunnel of repeating layers. Yeah, there's just, like, a sense of repetition, not infinite recursion, but sort of a repeated pattern that really strikes as sort of being... It reminds me of, like, Uzumaki. Like, almost cosmically, again, like, sort of like how the rules of the world seem to be sort of cosmically set to be this way. It feels like the patterns themselves are also not the results of, like, characters creating things, but of nature.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, kind of like how the flowers themselves create those patterns.
Yeah. I also think, so, to talk on a different topic as well, the story of the short is sort of like, I guess it would be, I would say it's simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you can kind of get the themes from our description alone as well. But I, like, just because it's, you know, kind of simple themes and kind of a simple story doesn't mean it's not really well told. Like, I love every time it, like, pops back to the new entourage or the new lowers of the king. And, like, it just shows... There's the last shot that is of that shows that, like, his castle has grown even higher, and there's now a line of entourage at his doorstep, but, like, he hasn't been present since the one time he showed up with the Rat Ambassadors. And so, like, it's this beautiful sort of, it's this beautiful, like, encapsulation of, you know, an absent king chasing power while his lessers are desperately waiting for him to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the end, he dies because he gets, like, greedy of his own hand. I love that element of how, like, his greed in search for just more crowns, which is, like, a status symbol, puts him into, you know, a place where he's surrounded by it, but he can't get it.
Yeah.
The only crown he can find is the one on his hand. That's what causes him to die. And then when faced with sort of a taste of his own medicine, somebody who is stealing crowns from him, he cannot handle it.
Yeah.
I love that aspect.
And I also love the aspect of, you know, the very end where it's like he gets his way by someone relenting, but in doing so he completely abandons, like, what is ultimately a really nice afterlife, especially for the king.
Yeah, like, in all, by all means, he did not deserve to be put into a banquet.
Yeah,
especially with the people he killed.
And you know what? In the end, he rejects that banquet, and good for him. I hope he's happy in space.
After a few weeks, he stopped thinking.
But then he'll land on Mars and start his own society of other hymns.
Mm, yeah, Marching Kings. I think that's what Adventure Time starts with. But, like, chronologically.
Excuse me.
Yeah. So, time to get a little political. So, at the end of Throat Notes, there is a message of Felix Colgrave in solidarity with the Aboriginal people of Tasmania and Australia as a whole. And so Felix Colgrave is Australian, and I think that sort of perspective of being, like, so anti-colonialist comes out not just in Throat Notes, but also in Double King.
Yeah.
That the king of Double King is very clearly, like, an allegory for that style of exploitation. You can apply it to colonialism, you can apply it to capitalism, you know, these different systems of people who are sort of, they want to get more for the sake of getting more.
Yeah, it's, you look for new places to conquer for the sake of being able to say you've conquered new places, but it's clear that there is no end goal. Right. It only ends with infinite growth in a very definitively finite world.
Right, yeah. There is... The crowns don't even fit on him beyond the first, like, three.
Yeah.
Like, he gets the serpent's crown and he is stuffed inside of it. Or, you know, he sees, like, the Mushroom King's crown and he doesn't know how to put it on his head.
Yeah.
There's just a limit to what he can actually comfortably do that he ignores. And then also, like, he's disrupting these different kingdoms and then not doing anything with them just for the status symbol of having crowns. Like you said, the ambassadors are just waiting for something to happen or something to do. And yeah, in the end, his greed is obviously what does him in. He dies with the biggest crown, but nothing else.
Yeah. I also love that moment where he like looks over and sees the other eyes that I theorize are his sort of ambassadors,
mm-hmm.
because that kind of tells that like clearly even to begin with he was not a good king.
Yeah,
like even to begin with he was already bad to his own people, and so like this is a person who clearly does not deserve even one crown, let alone to try and gather them all.
Yes, that. I do love the aspect of, like, the crowns are naturally growing as well. It is a natural resource, essentially, that he is just trying to take all of.
Yeah.
And he is unable to do so.
I also, it just sort of occurred to me. So, like, the reason that he can't really put on the mushrooms crown is because all of the crowns before are, like, your typical, like, silhouette of a crown. Like, you know,
it's... They're like Burger King crowns.
Exactly. But, like, crown is, like, the very round style of crown. And so, like, you know, it doesn't comfortably fit anywhere. And that's the crown that's in the, like, mountain of, you know, the mountain that looks like that OG style of crown. And so, it, like, I feel like that's a very subtle way of, like, basically a culture shock. You mm-hmm. know, where like in this culture, this is what crowns look like. And so once he comes there, even once he gets that resource, he doesn't know what the hell to do with it because it's not like anything he's had before.
Right. Yeah. He ultimately just like throws it away or drops it and forgets about it.
And chases something that is kind of like, I'll say worthless to him, because like he chases, you know, a cockatoo that looks like it has a crown of feathers, but like, you know, in the context of the short, it's like that is clearly not what he actually wants. That's not even close to what he wants, but it looks vaguely like something he's familiar with. So he's like, that's the resource I want, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's this feeling of, like, discarding what he already has the whole time so he can chase that next crown. That is also very interesting. You know, so, to talk about sort of current events, Microsoft is acquiring Activision Blizzard, which, I mean, to be fair, Activision Blizzard is extremely shitty.
Yeah.
And by all means, it seems like Phil Spencer is going to whip them into shape, more or less. Like, really kick out the people once he's legally allowed to do so.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is another aspect of, like, you know, oh, could this be a monopoly? Like, there was SEC or FTC filings of, like, you know, all right, we need to make sure this isn't a monopoly and doesn't go against antitrust laws.
Yeah.
And it in a way, it feels like the Double King is the wanting to monopolize the kingdoms.
Yeah.
He wants to merge all the kingdoms, but he doesn't do much with them once he gets them. And that's a very interesting, like, that's why I compare it to capitalism. And it's this very corporate thing of buying up companies and bringing them in and then not really doing what they used to do. You know? Yeah,
it's EA. You
yeah,
know?
It's EA.
It's buying up a developer, mismanaging them, and then going, well, you clearly didn't make a profit, so we'll just gut you.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's a very clear message, and it's a very simple message, but at the same time, subtext is for cowards.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it is a simple message doesn't mean that it can't be told really beautifully. And Felix Colgrave is very good at telling a message, like, indirectly, but also clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also bugs. He likes bugs a lot.
Yeah.
There are a lot of bugs.
But they're, honestly, really cute bugs.
They're very cute bugs.
Especially,
yes.
Yeah, especially in... Oh, fuck. I've forgotten its name. Not Double King.
Throat Note?
Especially in Throat Notes. Like, there's an entire scene where, like, a bunch of bugs are trying to crawl under a door, and, like, they're all really cute.
Yeah. Just because a guy's trying to take a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I have much else to say on the Double King front or the Throat Note front.
Yeah.
But check out the music video for Source by Fever the Ghost. Really good EP, by the way. The Crab and Honey EP. If you like psych rock. But I love that music video because it has these little dancing dudes. And it also has this just guy that whose job is to turn the world into a disco ball. And he's just kind of doing his job. He's having a good time.
Yeah, and also go ahead and go check out the other two videos, Double King and Throat Notes, if you haven't already. And if you've just listened to us, thank you for listening to us.
Yes, thank you for listening. You can follow us on any podcasting platform you listen to us on. which I guess sort of is sort of a self referential statement, but you can follow us on anything, you know, give us a comment, a rating, a review, let us know how we're doing. We'd love feedback. We'd love suggestions on what things we can cover in season two now. You can get those to us through Twitter at NetSurferPro, where you can follow us for teasers and updates on our newer upcoming episodes. You know, got a whole lot of cool things planned out, like, so you can check us out on Twitter for that. You can also follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. I tweet out when I go live on my stream. I make YouTube videos, music, stuff like that. I had a really funny tweet today, January 23rd, 2022. It's a really banger tweet. I was pretty proud of it. You should check that out. I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. I stream usually Monday, Wednesday, Friday from like 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time. I've been taking time off of Wednesdays to work on a video instead, so it's been a little up in the air. I stream competitive games, roguelites, a lot of teamfight tactics recently. I stream Hitman. Really looking forward to the new Hitman content coming this year, so check that out if you're interested in any of that. And you can also follow my other podcast, Board Game Bros, where I talk about board games and game design with my brother Jeff. And you can follow my second YouTube channel, Twack2, T-W-A-K, space, T-W-O, where we have our NetSurfer plays now, our playthroughs where we play through things together.
As for me, you can find me at Twitter and on TikTok, at Galen Wilson, that's at G-A-L-E-N-W-I-L-S-0-N. I post my hot takes, and I also have been pretty much more active on TikTok recently. So if you're looking for prime Galen content, you can find me mostly there. You can find my YouTube channel at The Only Galen on YouTube. I've decided that I'm going to do some like small form content, like sub 5-minute videos. So look forward to those sometime soon. And if you feel like looking at a dead screen, you can find me on Twitch at Machine Gun Vampire. I don't think I've streamed in a very long time, and I don't know that I ever will, but you know, it's no harm in following.
That's a dead screen. And with that, we will see you on our next episode. Hopefully we can get these out in a bit more of a regularly scheduled schedule again.
Yeah, now that one of us is not in fact confined to various different stages of containment, we will hopefully be able to start proper, basically.
Oh shit, you breach containment?
Oh god. Oh no. Oh god, the nine-tailed fox are coming in.
Oh no, it's redacted.